BITCO is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. BITCO.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Running a business keeps you on your toes. Wouldn't it be great if your internet connection could keep up? Introducing Business Class Fiber from Vox. It's super fast, reliable, and highly cost-effective. You get unlimited calls to all SA destinations, and it's scalable. So no matter the size of your business, you've still got room to grow. Get connected with Business Class Fiber from Vox and see what super fast internet really means. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Thank you for downloading the Tech Central podcast. I'm Duncan MacLeod. I'm in the beautiful suburb of Fairland in Johannesburg today to talk to veteran motoring journalist Roger McCleary, whose name I think will be familiar to many listeners to the show. Roger started his career back in the 1950s, writing for the Weinberg Boys High School magazine on motorcycle racing, a petrol-headed heart, I think it's safe to say that. Wow. Roger has written for countless newspapers and magazines and worked on and produced a number of motoring programs on radio, including SAFM, 5FM, and Radio 2000, amongst others. He's also worked in the automotive industry as both a PR and for companies such as Honda Motorcycles, Nissan, Caltex, and others. Now, I met Roger at a briefing at Audi in Sandton last week, and I thought his views on electric cars in South Africa, which he shared at that event, were really interesting. So, Roger, thank you for making time to chat to Tech Central today to talk about that and about the future of motoring.
That'd be good. You're very well informed, I must say, Duncan. Did I do all those things? I can't remember.
It's amazing what you can find on the internet these days.
No, it's been a wonderful life, actually, around motoring. I mean, motoring, we've gone through golden years, in my opinion.
Yes.
You know, and golden years of motorsport, so that all suited me.
Yeah, and you've seen a lot of change in your career, I'm sure.
You have seen a lot of change, but I think the change that is happening now is at an alarming rate. It's very quick. The digital age is amongst us. You've got to move with the times. There's no good trying to resist it. I think we all understand that. I think in the old days, things happened along, and you got nice changes along, and you thought, this is nice, and you know, it's all for the comfort of somebody driving a car, riding a motorcycle, or whatever. But they do say that 90% of all the inventions or discoveries in this world were made in the 19th century, so not too long ago. Like going to the moon, et cetera, which really launched technology upon the world. I mean, it's just unbelievable what they did, and now they're way out in space. So, I mean, the changes that are happening in the world, certainly in first world countries, are just amazing, and we've got to keep up to date with them.
Absolutely, and we're going to talk about some of those changes in the show today. So, Roger, I think it's fair to say that petrol runs through your veins. Does it pain you that the world is moving to electric cars, or are you excited about electrically powered vehicles?
I think the electrical powered vehicles are with us already, actually. We've seen examples. We've got the Nissan Leaf, and we've got the i3 BMW, and we've seen a sample of electric cars. Electric cars to drive are great. They really are great. I think if you're talking a pure battery-powered electric car, the only disadvantage, of course, at this stage is the range, you know. And there's other advantages. You haven't got gearboxes and things like that. But the range would be in this country where we travel far distances, even to see soccer matches, go down to Durban or maybe to Cape Town. At this stage, it'd be a disadvantage. So an electric car, I think, is a round city car. It's quiet. It's so-called, you know, clean burning. Of course, the power that goes into it could be a different matter coming from power stations that are coal-fired. Mm-hmm. But the technology that's gone into it, it's just like a normal car. But one thing that you do, and I think I've discussed with other journalists, you keep your eye on the range that's still left in that battery. If you're going to do a trip of 60 Ks and it's only got 45 Ks in the batteries, you don't take a chance because you don't know if it's going to build up again. It's not.
It gets quite stressful, doesn't it?
It gets stressful. You have your eye is glued to what the mileage is. And the mileage is not right yet, but they are developing lithium batteries, I think. Well, the lithium batteries are developing. That's what they run on. And a lot of the lithium comes from this neck of the woods, from Zimbabwe and that type of thing. The big problem was the cost of lithium batteries. They're talking long term, which they haven't reached yet. I mean, people give you 8 years warranty on your battery. Toyota now see with their hybrids on electric batteries are giving, on the big batteries that power their cars, are giving 10 years. It's quite gutsy to do that. But then what happens when you have to replace it?
Yeah,
because Toyota want the batteries back because they've got to dispose of them. And, you know, they haven't learned how to dispose of nuclear waste. How are they going to dispose of lithium? Because it's not degradable, actually. But we have had odd people I've heard of in Durban that can identify the cell in the lithium battery and replace it and keep the battery going. So I'm sure they'll develop something like it. Range is a problem. If you go to Durban, you're not going to be happy to, as much and nice to drive and comfortable as the car is, maybe some of them look a little bit odd compared to what we used to, but you're not going to stand for hours charging a battery in Harry Smith so you can get to Durban, whereas now we can go to Durban and come back on a tank full.
Yeah.
Basically clean burning fuel in the main with the modern cars. So I think batteries are great. I think it's for round town use. It's quiet, it's convenient, easy to drive.
So and maybe more applicable to Europe, for example?
I think for all these great cities, and they are big cities. We've got a couple, let's face it. We have traffic jams coming out of our ears in Cape Town, Joburg, Durban, and Pretoria and that type of thing. And it'll be nice, it'll be clean burning, and you'd feel happy in an electric car. It's very nice to drive, I've got to say.
Yeah. So someone who's spent his life driving petrol-powered vehicles, you're quite excited about the performance of these cars?
For a particular use, I think, Duncan.
Okay.
I think the sheer thrill of driving a motor car.
Yeah.
I don't know who's asked for this. I think governments have cashed in. So, I mean, the motor industry basically is a cash cow for governments to make up their budgets. And they tax us on fuel and parking and everything that goes on.
Mm.
And now that they've discovered a thing called noxious gas and all the emissions that come out of car exhaust. And they're taxing people on that. But for its own particular use, I mean, we've had electric vehicles for a long time. I mean, buses, trams, trains and everything. And good power, there's no doubt.
Yeah.
In this country, I think in mass, I think it'll be a long time, we've got a big car park of very old cars, which people need for their transport, that's all they can afford. But in mass, I think we couldn't depend on electric cars just as Eskom is structured at the moment. We're talking 2017. It's too unreliable, the management, etc. And, I mean, there's soldiers there, or soldiers on the ground, who are doing a great job for Eskom. It's really odd. But what we hear about Eskom is all about corruption and lack of power. And we have, in, as you call it, this lovely suburb of Fairlands, we have three lights out a week for hours. I mean, they can't even get that right. And we go, you can't phone up in the morning and say, listen, I can't come to work today.
I was just about to say, hey, boss, I can't come. There's been load shedding. I can't
drop
my car.
And they're telling me it's going to take 2 days to fix. People won't put up with that, you know. So I think electric cars definitely have the users. They're terrific. They go well. Make no error. They accelerate, etc.
That's the most amazing thing about driving one for the first time, isn't it? You don't actually realize.
There's no noise.
And you put your foot on the accelerator. Mm. Wow, where did that power come from?
I know. Now, electric power's fantastic. And the torque curve is absolutely flat from red one.
Yes.
So you've got all the torque you want in the world from the word go.
Yes.
I mean, no, they're different. Make no error. I think in future, it hasn't been that successful here because they are expensive.
Mm.
Is the hybrid, I think, with that you've got a little petrol engine and then you run and it runs on electric power, and when it runs down, you suddenly think, oh, something started here.
Yes.
And there's a generator charging the battery and it's independent. You don't have the trouble like electric car of coming home and then opening a little catch in the front of your bonnet and sticking a cable in, I think. But hybrid, I think, is going to be the way of the future.
Yeah. I'm seeing more and more hybrids around town. Toyota, obviously, was the pioneer in that space.
They did. No, and they've done it in a lot of their models, and they've sold millions.
Yes.
I think it's in first world countries where people get a conscience about clean air driving and that you're not using up oil supplies as you do. I think most countries want to get rid of using dependent on oil because the Arabs have held everybody to ransom, really, as oil companies tend to do. But they have done a great job of cleaning up their fuels. I mean, they're running clean burning fuels, which our country, by the way, was supposed to do, Duncan. I mean, 6 years ago, I remember going to a petroleum meeting and they said, yeah, we didn't get round to doing the Euro 5 fuels. We run in Euro 2, which is even more economical and clean burning than the fuels we've currently got. Mm-hmm. And we do get some amazing figures of consumption in the cars that we drive these days. But then they said, look, it cost that 6 years ago to get a refinished upgrade and to make Euro 5 fuels going to cost us 40 billion. Well, nothing happened. Not a thing, not from the Minister of Transport, Minister of Energy, nothing. Now the chap said, a little bit of a problem is that the new Euro 5 fuels, and we're about the only country in the world with Euro 2 fuels, or Africa per se, but that's going to cost 80 billion. Now, who's going to pay for it? Is it the government? Not likely. Is it the oil companies? Not rightly. Not likely. They say, well, you know, it costs enough to run these refineries. But my answer to that, we sell 27 billion litres of fuel. Surely you've put a bit of profit there aside for the refineries. 80 billion. They could pay it in a year or two. Or can the third option is the consumer pay. Right. You found the right option. And on goes the price of petrol to pay for refineries for cleaner fuel, which they should have done a long time. But that money's gone into some fiscus somewhere, but it certainly hasn't gone into improving the fuel in the car. So, as I say, the industry is almost a cash cow for governments. They've been able to find, they started in France now, and Renault, oh, your readings weren't quite right, and let's fine you heavily and that type of thing, which can long-term or short-term can have an effect when they start getting unemployment and these companies can't afford these big fines, which they've all done with hands on the heart. You know, we're keeping looking after the emissions and the clean air policy. I mean, there's America doesn't sign up on clean air policy, and they've got 36 of the cleanest cities in the world, clean air. So you don't have to be in this way. These people all go for these conferences. They're forever at conferences, clean air conferences all around the world. All they come back with is more tax. With the view is, okay, we'll charge them more tax and they use their cars less. That's rubbish. People need cars. Our cities are built around the later parts of these cities, not the inner cities now, but are built around motor cars, no doubt. We haven't got public transport. We haven't got trains. We haven't got buses. You've got Uber taxi. You've got taxis. But it's not almost formal system. And then they say you're going to share cars. If you're going to share with somebody who works in Krugersdorp and you work in Pretoria, I mean, you know, to work all that out, you know, that's the sort of future they see.
So, talking about regulations and the EU and tax and all the rest of it, we've seen a number of countries, I forget the full list, it's getting quite long now actually, but I think it was started by France. I know the Netherlands has said something in this regard. I think the UK might have even said something at some point in recent weeks, but they're all announcing that they're going to ban the sale of vehicles with internal combustion engines by certain dates, typically around the 2030, 2040 sort of time frame. Is that a good idea or not?
I don't know. They'll have to have thought a lot of other things out by the time they do that. They've made the motor industry the bad boy in the world at the moment. Emissions, that's their own laws, etc., California, green people, etc., and the number of people that have died through, you know, inhaling this. They've made the diesel engine, which has become a very economical and efficient form of fuel, and petrol emissions, and they've made the industry and its fuels the bad boys in this world. And every doctor in sight comes out and said, but you killed 4,000 people in the country because of diesel fuel. Well, until they sort out the 2 million people that are killed in road accidents, let's start with that. And of the 2 million, 45% of them are basically pedestrians. So, shall we train our pedestrians? Should we get our road rules right? Shall we stop corruption? Shall we get people licensed to drive? I mean, I saw a person the other day on a highway, like going to Rivonia up to Buccleuch Interchange, a person in one of these small cars, stopped in front of one of the overhead signs, with cars going along at 120, to read the signs. They'll go north to Pretoria, go down to Joburg Airport at Joburg. I mean, into Joburg. I mean, it's suicide. They haven't been taught to drive. Mm. And we've got so much corruption with license. I know people that say, but you don't have to learn to drive. You pay them 2,500 rand and you're in business. And we have all the police ministers saying, yeah, we're going to come right on. They're coming right on nothing. Mm. The corruption's unbelievable. And my feeling is they want to get rid of the cars, but the road transport or the transport ministry for the last 30 years has never had a budget. Well, if they had a small budget, we'd never hear about it. They've never got a plan or a vision for stopping road accidents, for road safety and applying the law and observing the rules of the road, which, funny enough, do work. Take out the rule book, which I'm sure a lot of people haven't seen, and the road safety would be right up there, you know. So banning cars, that's 20 odd years you're talking about, could happen. But as our car park stands at the moment, I can't see it.
Impractical.
I think so. I mean, you take off the people of the road. Look, there's a big problem on the road, I think, is that basically all the roads that are going to be built are built now. The only people building roads are China. They sell about 22, 23 million cars a year. And they do have tremendous traffic jams. You know, Beijing or Shanghai, man, that's traffic jams, you know. I haven't seen that much pollution. I think on a still day you probably have it all clouded and misty, et cetera, et cetera. But to build a road here, to buy the property and build, I mean, it's charging the same as maintaining the roads, what you used to build a road for now. You know, certainly at the speed they do it, it's madness. So something's got to be done to control the traffic. I mean, the number of cars coming on the road, otherwise you're going outside your driveway and you're in a traffic jam. I mean, we're just going to get gridlocked, I think, in time. So banning, petrol and diesel, I don't know what change is going to make.
Yeah.
You know,
specifically they want to ban for the sale of new vehicles. So they're not proposing taking petrol powered cars off the road per se. They're talking about new vehicle sales by that date. And I suppose if these developed markets do that, it'll have a knock-on effect in South Africa, even if we don't have legislation, because these vehicles are going to be coming here.
Yeah, I think Duncan overseas there's a troublesome thing. There's that youngsters aren't interested in cars because the public transport's so good these days, and the cars have become a trouble. They've taxed them out of sight. You want to park here, you've got to pay a penalty. Parking, you're coming into London, there's penalties. You can't bring your cars here, anywhere. There's just too many of them. And I mean, I remember long in the 60s in Japan, you had to show the cops that you had a parking spot before you could buy a car because those roads are so narrow and congested. So they've taxed them out of sight, and they've made it very difficult to own a car. In South Africa, as we sit here now, I think the mentality, I like the independence, I want to get my own car, I want to go on holiday. I don't care if it stands 10 hours a day or overnight. I own it. I buy the petrol, and I pay my taxes, which are going up all the time, and I can use it. I'm independent, and I can take families around. Now they're going to tell you that, okay, you want an autonomous car, for instance, you just dial it up on your phone, as I'm sure you're going to do. I know it's happening around the world, and the car arrives at your front door. I don't actually want that. I actually want to drive myself and maybe visit someone on the way there and not pay a fortune, because once they've got it all tied up, they're going to charge you a fortune for autonomous motoring. So I don't think it'll be a long time coming. I think people with technology here, we've got it here in this country, it's moving along. From South Africa, with our makeup of population in Africa and the road system, etc., let's sit back and see what comes that suits us. That's not going to be too expensive, that everybody keeps mobile. The certainly public transport scene can't keep us mobile. They haven't got the taxis, etc., without cars, or the train system. They're forever breaking down or having accidents. We got rid of electric buses. Now we've got buses, and we had trams before. Funny enough, in Europe, that's changed the whole attitude, funny enough, to cars. And they're electric. I don't know, we've got a long way to go. I think from South Africa's point of view, I can't see it coming immediately. Let's sit back and see what happens. The technology is here now. A lot of the autonomous things like radar and braking when you're getting too close to the car in front. And even the autonomous part of cruise control. The old days, the cruise control was in your hands. Now radar's controlling it. Mm. You're going along on your cruise control and you think, why am I slowing down?
Yes.
Because the guy in front's about 100 meters away from you, but you're going quicker.
Yes.
And it's working it out for you. Now, let something go wrong with that. You're going to pay through the neck for that. You know, you're not getting these gadgets for free.
Yeah.
I mean, the technology, the money that's going, the clever people doing it, that's not going into a car for free. I think the best thing that's happened is the navigation, which you can get on your phone anyway, Bluetooth. Because once you've seen all the gimmicks and gadgets, you do it once and you play around for a bit, and the rest you drive it.
Yes.
Put to a destination, go around the neighborhood, whatever. I don't know, we've just got to sit back and take it all in. But one thing about cars are getting expensive, and the technology's getting very expensive.
That's true. Yeah.
And one thing I must say, I can't see through all this. There hasn't been a peep from the oil industry. You know, they hear about electric cars coming. My feeling, just before I tell you, the oil industry, if you want cleaner emissions, I mean, the biggest things they say is volcanoes, like 240 going all the time in this world erupting. Under the sea, they've got even more bubbling up. they've got cows, and they've got power stations way ahead of the small percentage of gases going out of motor cars into the atmosphere. Why don't they put catalytic converters on top of coal-fired power stations' chimneys? No, because you can't tax a power station, but you can tax a car.
You can't tax a volcano.
Yeah, but just the one thing I always find funny is that the oil industry, which holds, and they've got an unbelievable industry. I mean, they've got the oil wells, they've got the transport, these huge tanks, they bring it to your country, they take in tankers to the service on your corner, it's convenient, you pick it up, you can go to Durban, Cape Town, maybe in a tank full. They've never said a word here.
Mm.
They stay absolutely stum and carry on. I know you've got on their service stations, they're putting up electric power points. They're saying you can charge now by wireless. You don't necessarily have to be hooked into somebody. The technology is unbelievable. I think the motor industry and the digital age today, they can do anything you want to do. I mean, there's our Elon Musk wanting to go to the moon or take trips up in space. They'll do it. There's no doubt about it. There's no good resisting it. I've always learned from motorsport over the years, don't resist change. Just take the best that's coming out of it. It'll sort itself out, you know, and you'll find that the best will come out of it.
I was interested in what you were saying about ownership and the youth. I was reading a fascinating article. I can't remember where it was, unfortunately, but there was a great piece in a magazine I was reading over the weekend saying that millennials don't want to buy stuff.
There you are.
They are looking for experiences, not products. And this is starting to manifest in the economy. And so, you know, people, that's why Airbnb, that's why Uber, etc., are exploding. And youngsters, they look at cars and they say, why would I want to own that if I can just have an experience with it? And I wonder what that mentality or that approach is going to mean for the car industry.
I think a lot of them want the experience for next to nothing. You know,
it's true.
I haven't experienced that because I've been around a lot longer, but that's how it's going.
Mm.
But I think that, funny enough, the buying power, to a large extent, is either through the banks, of course, and we've got a big burgeoning market coming up, you can see, of luxury cars, and the people that own cars before downsizing, funny enough, because they've experienced the cost and the license of that. But the millennials, they haven't, I don't think, I know a lot of them are clever, but I don't think they've got the buying power of people that are now 30 and 40 with families, etc., and good jobs and educated and, you know, qualifying that. Everybody makes a fuss of the millennials and the music and this, and I think if they like that, they like it.
Mm.
But I think they'll settle down in time. You can't just have everything for free in this world. They want free education, etc., etc.
But they can pick up their smartphone. They can press a button on their smartphone, and next thing a Merc S-Class can be parked in their driveway.
I've got I think I told you the other day, I've got a grandson in Vancouver, which is a very modern city, one of the top five in the world. He's a BSc IT engineering. And he wants a car, and he does it on his app on his phone, and says it's around the corner. So he walks around the corner, there's a locked car, clicks on his phone, opens the car, and there's the key in the car, drives it around Vancouver all day. When he's finished, he drops it off anywhere he wants, clicks it off, and that's it, and he gets charged.
And the next guy comes along.
And he pays for it either off his watch, he tells me now, or off his phone. I mean, that's how he does, and that's the world. And he's just pre-millennial. He's a little bit older than that, but... No, they can do anything today. I mean, let's face it, we can't fight it. But
what does this mean for the motoring industry if this takes off in a big way? If people start to say, well, okay, it might not be huge in this country for some time, but certainly I could imagine it happening in places like Vancouver, places like Berlin, London, etc., where people say, well, I really don't need to buy a car anymore because I can just use all these sharing services. And what does that mean for the motor industry? Does it mean fewer car sales?
Well, I always feel that. I've said to some of the top directors, I mean, sales, marketing directors, and even up to MDs, you know, you're talking yourself out of a job here. Because everything, your chairman can actually take within a year or two, maybe now, can take out his iPad or his cell phone and look at all the budgets, what we're selling a month, be in touch with all his dealers and his customers in his palm of his hand, which you can. You can buy a car in the palm of your hand, get finance, and have it delivered where you want to do it, or it'll be happening in a few years' time, they say. But what happens to all the jobs? And if you haven't got people in jobs, who's going to buy your cars? You know, so a lot of the stuff is to make it easier to do things, more expensive maybe, but it takes away unemployment. It puts in unemployment, and you've got to have those people making money to buy your product. So long-term thing. There might be an answer to that. But our employment, unemployment rate has gone up high in many, many countries. And there's Elon Musk with Tesla. He's just got rid of 400 people this week that we're talking about. And he says he's not doing the results he wanted. I mean, he's employed people. But if you're not doing the sales at the end, you know, so that's how it goes. And a lot of people went like that. I mean, Ford made a come in the early days because, I mean, a bloke like Henry Ford made the Model T Ford. Then he's making a Model A. I think it was an A. But he forgot to tell the people that we haven't actually got it sorted out, but we're stopping the T now. What are you going to do for a year? I can't pay you for a year, you know, before I get the Model A going. So we've made a few mistakes in the industry, you know, and unemployment can come very quickly.
While we're talking about Elon Musk and Tesla, let's talk about what electric cars look like. I was saying to you before we started the podcast that I'd love to own a Tesla Model S. I would never buy one, but I'd love to have one. Beautiful looking car. It looks like a proper sports car.
Yeah.
But generally, outside of Tesla, the car makers' electric, pure electric vehicles are quite ugly.
Yeah.
And I'm really struggling to understand because I think it's putting off a lot of buyers. You look at the BMW i3, which is a fantastic car to drive. It looks like a big bug with giant eyes. The Nissan Leaf. They've just bought out a new model of that, which actually looks a lot better. But the previous models of the Nissan Leaf were not good-looking vehicles.
Look, I think they almost look like concept cars. You know, they put concept cars on the shows, and that's 5 years ago. They're going to take people's opinion here. They don't like, say, the Panamera Porsche came out. They didn't like the back. Hello, it's got better quickly. But these design, I mean, you're designing 5 years out before it's put in production, put on show. So to me, they looked like concept cars. They looked ultra-modern when they came. You think, oh, look at this. But you grow tired of it because you stand out from all the others, I think. And the other cars look so nice. You know, and it's all your car sales, actually, I've always said it over the years, starts on the drawing board. If it was one of the top designers, even had the Korean cars, until they got German design, they looked funny Eastern cars. And then they became a world car. The likes of Peter Schreier and Thomas Berkel and those people came along from Germany, XBM and Merck and Porsche and that. Hello. You've got cars that appeal to you. And what we always said about the look of a car, when you launch a car, I was at Alpha and our MD always said, all you want at a launch of a car, just what you said now, when you see it, you reckon, gee, that's nice, I'd like one of those. You don't want the word but to put it in. Mm-hmm. But if only they change this or that.
Yeah.
Excuse me. But that's how a car goes. You've got to make it that generally the masses say, I mean, you look at a Ferrari. And you're paying for that. But you can't fault a line on a Ferrari. You know, it's perfection.
Yes.
Now, I see Alphas come out with that with their Giulias and Stelvias. Mm. They look right, and they go right. And the thing should go as good as it looks. So what you say, they're like a little i3. It's a talking point when you get to somebody. But after you've spoken to them about it a couple of times, it looks, sometimes it could seem to look a bit odd, as you say.
It certainly gets people's heads turned on.
I
had the i3 for a week to drive. BMW sent it to me, and wherever I went, on sidewalks, everywhere, people's heads just turned and looked at me.
You say about that, Duncan, is that I remember the Mustang, the good old Mustang, always made left-hand drive. Now they made right-hand drives. Hello, you can bring him to every country and get a Mustang. They can't get enough. But we went to the launch in Cape Town. I have never seen a reaction to a car shouting at Muzzies, taking selfies, say, go, 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 I want to see the car. Let me hear the sound of the engine.
Yeah.
It's the biggest reaction I've heard to a car I'd ever heard, with everybody pointing at it as they passed in the street, and there's their selfies going as you come past. I couldn't believe that. The other one's a talking point for a while, but a Muzzy will always just do that for you. You know, I think it's the sound and the look, and the Corvette, I think, does the same, but they've never made a left-hand drive, so we're not going to see much of that. But they knew how to turn people on. Yeah. And then when you get in the car, it goes like a rocket. Mind you, so does the electric car go like a rocket. When you get blown off by an electric car, you think, whoa, here they go. They do.
In fact, the Tesla Model S, I think, is the fastest production car in the world.
Well, could be. Well, they've just got a Chinese car now, unknown Chinese car, I think in Dios, or something. And it went around the Nürburgring faster than anybody. A Chinese car has gone around the Nürburgring faster than anybody. You come with your Porsches, come with what you like. Hello. I think it was like 7 seconds faster than a Porsche or something like that.
Good grief.
Yeah.
I'll be seeing electric cars in motor racing.
They've got the e-formula. Now they do it in cities around the world. Yes. And the guys are going for it. Porsche, Jaguar, all going in. Mm. I see even some of the Koreans are going in for that. Now they want... I think it's got a limited life myself. I personally think, having been in motorsport for 50, 60 years, whatever, is that you've got to appeal to the senses.
Mm.
We've lost the sound that we used to have, certainly with Formula Ones. It excited you when you heard them, even from distance.
Yes.
We lost the smell in Castle Argo, and it was quite an exciting smell, funny enough. The sight has been, you get used to the cars going around corners ultra quick, which you can't believe.
Mm.
Because the tyres have got such a grip now, and they all go around quickly, and they break so late, and you just, there's no feel to it. The old one, they've glued the car to the road now.
Mm.
That, I mean, they say at 160 km with a modern Grand Prix car, you could drive it upside down the ceiling of a room, you know, at 160, because it's like glued to the road. It's hell on the driver. I mean, they're going through like 5-6 G's.
Mm.
G's on their necks, so they've got strong necks now, but who cares? Technology is not exciting unless you're part of it, that you can, you know, in a car, travel here, there, and everywhere, outperform somebody, whatever you do. Mm. But in my book, saying, oh, it's electric cars, and we've got car tires that grip, yippee. But that's not what we're doing it for. In the old days, they used to say that Formula One provides the technology for the motor industry, not the case today. Motor industry can make anything.
Mm.
They provide it for Formula One. And as probably the best commentator in Formula One, Murray Walker, used to say, we're not in a technological exercise. We're in the entertainment business. And let's put on a show. And I agree with that. So it's not an exciting thing. And I think long term, the industry's putting into electric racing cars, and they go like hell. And they're running in the centre of New York and the centre of London, and they're taking a place you never take a noisy Grand Prix.
Well, yes.
Not quite so noisy these days. But in time, I don't know if they get excited. Maybe the corporate, and you get another market coming. We'll wait and see.
Let's come back to electric cars and the South African market. We've spoken about South Africans wanting to drive long distances and that being a problem. You don't want to recharge in Harrismith for 3 hours while you're on your way down to Durban. Mm-hmm. But what are some of the other things holding back the adoption of electric vehicles in South Africa? I know there's the charging station network is extremely limited here. What's the motoring industry doing to roll that
Well,
out?
You know, they're already starting to put charging stations in Melrose Arch. Mm-hmm. I think a limited. Now, BM, they committed, and Nissan's committed to looking after the customer, making it more convenient. I think that the cost, I think, was the first big thing. I mean, why must I pay so much more? I mean, half the cost of the car, if you replace it, is the battery. You know, that's what's going to happen when you replace it. You get a bill for 330,000 Rand for an i3 battery, and your car costs you 600,000.
Mm.
You won't be shouting whoopee. But, as I say, they're going to have wireless charging. I can't believe that, but it's going to happen, and it will happen. There's anything they say they can do, they do. But I think every single manufacturer is committed to the technology of electric motoring. And to autonomous motoring, they've all got cars out, they're on the shows, the engineers are going, clever people. And I think it'll find its natural base, and it's got to work on numbers. It's got to be economical to make. At the moment, it's very expensive because it's pretty exclusive. I think let's just wait and see. But it's here now. I mean, we've got various forms of autonomy, as we said, built into your cars, these latest cars, and we've got electric cars. I think what I've heard, they've sold 7 Leafs and that. And that's what I heard. And then they had 63 BMs.
i3s or i8s.
And they're committed. I mean, you get the MD, Michael Whitfield, he's committed to electric cars, and so is Nissan, make no error.
Right.
And they all are committed and doing it and in their plants. At the meantime, you get the chief of Volkswagen saying, don't write off petrol and diesel. That's going to be around a long time. Because the world is not always for convenient motoring. It's for necessity. I mean, Africa, let's get the roads right and the road rules right, and then you couldn't just put those cars in there, you know.
Yeah. So a charging network, who's going to build that? Is it the
government? Well, the motor industry is building it. They're starting to do it. They're putting it at their service stations in the congested areas. I mean, like as I say, Melrose.
In cities.
So you can go to dinner and have your car charging there, you know.
But you can't go to Harrismith and reach.
Well, you could stand a long queue. Look, you fill up normally and say, people work it out, 7 to 10 minutes with petrol, you're going to get something to eat. And you go to a comfort station or whatever, to the loo, takes you 7 to 10 minutes. You can charge, and you've got a couple of hundred cars waiting for fuel, and it's going to take them 2-3 hours. They're going to be a long queue on the motorway waiting for fuel. You know, no, but somebody will work it out. Mm. Look, they're looking for longer distances. Porsche's talking about 500 k's. You need 1,000 k's, you know, but your eyes will be glued, I tell you, to that meter that tells you how many k's you've got to get, man. Didn't you find that with the
i3? I did indeed, yeah.
There you are. Yeah. And everybody you talk to, they say the same thing.
It's very stressful. It's very stressful. You don't know if you're going to make it.
And, yeah. And you can't ease off and get back. Yeah. You're going to be stuck inside. And then say, don't tow.
Yes.
Oh, really? So you've got to get a flatbed and all sorts of things. I think it'll all work out. It's early days. They've got to think it all out. They've seen, I mean, I think it's governments making all these laws, I think, long-term to make taxes out of cars. I mean, the amount of tax they take out of, say, a litre of fuel is ridiculous. But just one thing on this NOx reading. You ask anyone in any company, I'll ask you about your car. You've got a Jeep Renegade. What's your emission reading coming out of your exhaust?
Haven't the first clue.
And nobody has. But I tell you has is the government that taxes the car. Because you've got to pay your tax as it leaves the factory. Tell me the cost of fuel. Do you know the cost of petrol? Do you know what it is?
I think it's around 13 rand 15.
You think it's over 14? Nobody knows. You know why? Because they just say it's going up 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 cents. You don't work it out how much it costs. You say fill it up on your card or put in 200 rand or 300 rand or something. They've conned us. So nobody knows. And they didn't know. Have you ever heard of a NOx reading coming out of a car? Some green person in California, and they got hands on the hearts there and made laws that, yay for them. There came a NOx reading. Now, NOx is a nitrous oxide, which is like laughing gas. It's the stuff they put in your gums when they're going to inject you for your tooth when you're having a filling. It uses 160, it does a flat teaspoon of nitrous oxide every 167 k's of driving. Come on, man, where do you come with this? And they fined Volkswagen 43 billion and taken back cars. It's costing them zillions because some law in California. It's ridiculous. I know you've got to sell cars over. There's a big market for them. But they have brought out these laws without thinking. I mean, it's just, never mind the unemployment and things that are going to happen, but the government has found a way to do it.
Many of these governments are subsidizing electric vehicles. So you buy an electric car and they
get... Yeah, but not here.
Not in South Africa.
No.
Should they be doing that here?
Yeah, they should. I mean, that's for the development costs that have gone in. You'd think to make it more popular for the... They don't care. Why would you change the law of the emissions from 120, carbon emissions out your exhaust, and try and get the fuel, cleaner fuel, to make less tax? Let it come out with cleaner fuel. Forget it. We're making tax others. Keep it. And the same thing will happen with subsidies. Why subsidize these guys? We're making plenty out of petrol and diesel. Why would we change? I think anyway.
Yeah.
It sounds wrong, but I'm telling you, the taxes that come out the motorist, and we're going to get taxed more.
Every year.
Every month. Somebody at this moment is working on a new tax for sure, you know.
I wanted to talk about just how clean electric vehicles are. In many European countries, of course, it's wind power or nuclear power, which is relatively clean.
Yeah.
In South Africa, we generate the vast bulk of our electricity through dirty coal-fired power stations.
Cheapest way to do it.
Is it, I mean, have you looked at the sums? Are electric vehicle emissions at the source actually worse than the
emissions? I don't think the numbers we got, but in time, if we all went over, like overseas, not everybody's got nuclear power stations, which are clean, reliable, et cetera, et cetera. And expensive, but coal-fired power stations are certainly pumping it out, and that's who's charging up your electric car. So
you're just moving the source.
You're moving
of
the goalposts, you know. So
someone else is going to get the pollution somewhere else.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's what's happening. You know? And you're getting the odd wind come off the Atlantic that blows it around the country. You do get it. I mean, they had a red glow over London, came off the Sahara Desert. Can you believe it? Sand, red sand from Sahara. Gave a red glow over London at night because the wind had blown in from these tornadoes or hurricanes in the Atlantic. I mean, but that's what's happening. Our world is, in space terms, is a small place. But of course it's polluting. It's not.
These aren't clean cars, especially in the South African context, because of our source of electricity.
Absolutely.
And what about the batteries?
Well, the biggest thing of all is what you can do with the batteries when you're finished, as we said. Yeah. They're not degradable.
To what extent can they be recycled?
Well, the bloke in Durban says he can put the faulting cells, he can replace them.
Okay.
Now, somebody will work out a plan, I'm sure. Mm. But, I mean, even South Africa, where they put in nuclear waste, nobody's told about this.
Yeah.
Probably doesn't know. The people don't know why they've got scabs all over them, because basically they're burying the stuff at the bottom of your garden at Caruso. I mean, who knows?
Yes.
You know, so that's one of the problems coming up. But in the meantime, progress carries on, and the best of it all will be coming. I mean, the digital age actually started with computers. I mean, I remember I worked at Caltex, and the computer room was a whole floor of a building, you know, and that's in your hand. And yes, the boy's going to the moon. The power you've got in your hand is more than the spaceships. I mean, that's how it's going. It's all miniature. You know, for older people, we can't hardly accept it, I think. Well, maybe you don't, but you're not going to change the change. It's going to happen.
Mm. Are cars becoming like smartphones? I mean, we used to upgrading our smartphones every so often. A new operating system comes out. We're updating our apps all the time.
No, that's good marketing, boy. They've got you over a barrel there. They've got us over, not me, but they've got people over a barrel. And you've got to have the latest thing. You've got to take it out of your pocket. It's fashionable to take it out and show, look at, oh, haven't you got a number 7 or number 8 and now number 9? Soon as you've had it 2 years, hello, there's another number. And it gives you more. Mm. Whether you'll use all those apps which you're paying for, but I don't know. I mean, it's like a car with all the gadgets. Once you set it up and use it for a month and showing your buddies, look what I've got in my car. I don't know. Do you use half the stuff?
But these things are becoming like computers on wheels. Are we going to have to upgrade our cars like we upgrade our phones?
Well, you can do. You can do your office from your car now. Sit in the back. When they bring autonomous, sit in the back. No, they're not allowing people in some states. You've got to sit behind the wheel in case. The whole idea before was go to the office, sit in the back seat of your autonomous car. They need to put in a couple of apps in there about our driving standards that they haven't recognized in Arizona or in Europe, because cops going through red robots and they haven't got that. Let's get the rules right. But I think it's your office it's in your hand or in your car. You can swap to your car anytime you like. It's brilliant. Whether we need it all the time, it's sped up the world. I must say, I go through a couple of offices and you see everybody's looking at their own, they're watching the TV and watching family movies. Do they work during the day? Everybody's on the computers all day, but I don't know if they're all getting answers. I don't know. Because that's way beyond me, you know. But
I must say the idea of sitting in the back of the car while the car drives me somewhere appeals to me a lot.
Because only if traffic jam, Duncan. If you're sitting every morning at
that's true.
The thrill, if you had a...
Which is most of the time, because you do most of your driving in the city, in a traffic jam, going to
meetings. No, you do. But the sheer thrill of driving, say a big V12 BM or Ferrari or Jaguar or something like that, or turbocharged, there's still a thrill in motoring, and you want to see and feel and touch. You know, they all say about, okay, in your iPad or in your cell phone, in your hand, you can order your car. 95% of the people are so clued up, they just know what they want to buy because they've been so well informed by social media, by radio, magazines, whatever. But they still want to see and feel and touch it, smell the leather. And so maybe that will change. I don't know. They talk about mobility or neutralize all that, but it's still a thrill. Come home with your new car and ever smells good, real leather in there, and then when you put your foot in, feel it. You don't often use it, but there's still a thrill in motoring, and you don't want to take that away. Sure, for us, say, as we said, city driving, get in the car and you can carry on with your work or whatever without having to drive around, which is really just move forward at a walking pace, you know. So
you're quite right. The last thing you'd want to do when you spend $500,000 or R1 million on a new car is to get it home. Or take it from the dealership and you get in the back seat and don't drive it.
I mean, and you go home and here we are, dear, in the back seat. I'm not at the wheel. I don't know. Who knows what's ahead? I really don't know. But the cities are certainly getting jammed up.
Yes, indeed. What would it need to happen, Roger, before you personally would consider buying an electric vehicle?
I need a lot of money, have a lot of petrol cars, and then I consider for convenience maybe electric.
Yeah.
I can't see it in my future, me personally. I like to drive. I must be honest, they're great to drive. I don't like the trouble of driving. I don't like the range. Probably be solved in time. And it wouldn't be top of my list. Because there's so much to choose from. We're very privileged in this country to have I don't know how many manufacturers. We've got over 50 manufacturers and more coming. Some have left, etc.
Yeah.
Whether they're all profitable, I don't know. But we've got a range of cars that are as good as you get that's made by the world motor industry. They're here in South Africa.
It's remarkable, actually, yeah.
I mean, hydrogen cars, we've driven them here. Whether we'll ever get them here, I don't know. Could be dangerous if they leak or something. But we've driven all those cars, and they have. I mean, you go to Hong Kong, the taxis are run on butane gas.
Mm-hmm.
So you can run all these things, but... electric car wouldn't be top of my list.
Okay. Roger McCleary is a veteran motoring journalist. Roger, are you on Twitter?
I'm not on anything modern like that.
No, okay.
I'm not on Facebook either.
Okay, well done.
I think, in my book,
yeah.
Modern Facebook, if you do something wrong on Facebook, it's there forever.
Yes.
Stay away from these people. You just say one word wrong, and you're there forever. I reckon stay away from that, because as you get older, you do say things. You don't have to worry about, you know, hurting people's feet. Not on that basis, but I reckon stay away from that. You don't want to be known throughout the world by something that you, not that I'll be known throughout the world, but that you've said something wrong. And look, it's happened to people now. They're going to court and that.
Yes.
So I was just watching all the others at work. I don't know how you wouldn't feel that way, Duncan, but...
I'm actually trying to extricate myself a little bit from Facebook. I'm thinking of uninstalling the app on my phone and only checking in occasionally, because it does consume a lot of time.
I actually got my grandson, the one who's got, you know, up in IT, to take my picture off Facebook, and it's a job to do, because once you're on,
yes,
and how he fiddled it, I do not know, but it suddenly didn't appear, and I've had people say, just put your updated picture on. No. Just stay away. No, really, that's my view, because there's a lot of people get into trouble from being on Facebook, and they want to say and comment on things.
Well, well done for keeping out of that world. What phone do you use, by the way?
I've got a little Nokia.
Okay.
People laugh about it. It's a phone. It's got everything I want. It's phones. It takes messages.
Okay.
Sends phone. And you can phone around the world in your pocket.
Right.
And it cost me next to nothing. Okay. I actually got out of a contract. I said, just send a bill every month, and we pay for what we used. Now, I've got to that stage.
Yeah.
But and I'm surrounded by people with all the latest. You've got to have the latest. I mean, the one social side I find a little bit disturbing, being in the Guild of Motoring Journalists, and we travel around a lot in bulk, and is to see, nobody talks to each other now. They're all sitting on their cell phones. This is the way we talk to each other, they say. And I remember Rory Byrne, when he first went to Ferrari, he was the designer of the successful Ferraris at Schumacher driving there, South African guy from Bedford View. And Rory said to the guys, listen, stop emailing the bloke who sits next to you in the office. Get up and talk to him, or talk to him across the desk. Now, because the guy wants to put it down, say he's got it on in writing. So if anything happens, he can say, look, this is what I said. Come on, man. He says, if we're going to build racing cars, you can't build racing cars that way. And I've always reckoned that. Talk to somebody. I had a boss early days with Honda. And he said, never mind writing letters and that. Go see people, because there's body language involved and you get the truth the proper way.
Mm.
And go and find out things by face-to-face, I think.
Roger, it's been a great discussion. Thank you so much for joining us on Tech Central today. Before we go, you're still doing quite a bit of writing.
I do.
You still do a radio show on Radio Today.
I do. It's 1485. Everybody, listen to it. Or on DSTV Audio Channel 869. And you can get it on your laptops.
And your writing is mainly in trade magazines.
And I've written columns and all sorts of things.
Mm.
And I still support motorsport and go to motorsport. And the classic cars, it's sort of our era that we're forever going to get togethers with some of the great drivers that we have, the Sol Funamera's and Tony Martins and Ian Schechter's, and we have a wonderful time, which I think has been lost a little bit. Today, people are not communicating, they can get together.
Mm-hmm.
It goes on like it used to do till the early hours of the morning. They're terrible people, But but we have regular meetings, and it's wonderful to go to and mix with those guys who really put world motorsport on our map here, and we're well known throughout the world. From this little country, South Africa, could shape up with anybody. And I always reckon, with the population in South Africa and the talent we have, we've got it with Musk, and we could be number one country. We've got the potential to be number one country. The talent, the universities, the people, all around education and catching on to all the new things that are coming along.
Just get government out the way. It might happen.
Here, here.
Roger, thank you.
Thanks, Duncan.